Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, November 14th, 2018, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at page 157, chapter 11, A Vision for You, the third paragraph, Hopelessness Was Written, reading through two paragraphs, ending with, I drink like that, and comments will be on both those two paragraphs. The readers for today are Gina R. for the 12 steps, CJ H. for the 12 traditions, and our readers of the text are Robin P. and Kathy Jo P. The share ID for Tuesday, November 13th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,173. That's 12173. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 12,181. That's 12181. And our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that the people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence in the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Gina R. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Kathleen. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and I'm a compulsive eater in Green Valley, Arizona. These are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to do service. I pass.
And thank you, Gina. And CJH, would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay, great. This is CJ, compulsive eater, the 12 traditions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. 10, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity. The level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks so much that I get to be of service, and I pass.
Great. Thank you, CJ. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 157, chapter 11, A Vision for You. The third paragraph, Hopelessness, was written. We're reading through two paragraphs ending with, I drink like that. I will now ask Robin P. to begin reading.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Kathleen. I'm Robin P. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in the Los Angeles area. Hopelessness was written large on the man's face as he replied, oh, but that's no use. Nothing would fix me. I'm a goner. The last three times I got drunk on the way home from here. I'm afraid to go out the door. I can't understand it. For an hour, the two friends told him about their drinking experiences. Over and over, he would say, that's me. That's me. I drink like that. Wow, I completely identify with this. And, you know, I felt so afraid too because I had originally come into the program in 1981 and been 12 steps in, and I was in a program that was called Gray Sheet in New York City. And I just, after 2.5 years, fell off the program and couldn't, no matter what I did, I was not able to get back in. And I spent years trying and trying other things. And finally, I found these phone meetings about 3 years ago. And someone shared with me their experience, strength, and hope. And I was so amazed that she called herself a recovered compulsive overeater. And I thought, that I know the power of words, and that is so powerful that you actually call yourself a recovered compulsive overeater. And I thought, wow, could that be true, that someone could actually be that recovered? And then she said the way that she recovered was through working these steps and then working with others and practicing these principles in all of her affairs. And I thought, oh my gosh, if she can do it, I can do it. And I started, you know, I had the gift of desperation. And I think that's what I ask my sponsees now. And because that's been a real true test for me. You know, she said, are you desperate enough to go to any length to recover? And I wholeheartedly said, yes, I am. And that's what I ask people now. And it really is a gift because it's the willingness to pick up the phone instead of the food, to reach out to others instead of reaching out for a bite, you know, and to be of service and to help other people through the 12 steps the way I've been, the gift that's been so freely given to me. And, you know, this man is actually the third, Bill and Dr. Bob, they visited. This was their first visit with AA number 3, and 3 is a crowd. This was the first crowd of AA is this man in this bed. And, you know, if they had been through such a hard time themselves and yet they went and gave service, they knew that service was their way out. And that's been my experience too. And I can be in, going through so much, and then I'll just go give some service and I'll feel so much better. And I'll think, what changed? Oh yeah, I got out of myself, you know, and when I'm selfish and self-seeking, dishonest, resentful, or fearful, I get to surrender it to God, to my sponsor, and then go help someone else. And that's living in 10, 11, and 12. There's a solution for everything. This man, it seemed like he was hopeless. And he felt like, oh my gosh, thank you, that he can't even get out of his bed. He was so afraid to leave. And yet, it, as the story goes on, he gets hope. And then he does become the third person in AA. So God bless everybody in your recoveries. With that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Robin. Okay, we're going to open the line for sharing on the third and fourth paragraph on page 157. Who would like to share on those two paragraphs?
Laura W.
Melanie C. Melanie C.
Sunny S.
Okay, wait, hold on.
Lisa.
Hold on. I heard Laura, Melanie C.
Sima M.
Lisa. I
didn't Lisa J. R.
Lisa J.R.
Penny L.C.
Sunny S.
Penny L.C. And who was with her?
Sunny S.
Sima M.
Sunny S. Was that Sima?
Yes.
Okay,
Christy
so
B.
Let's stop there. Okay, we're going to stop at Christy B. Okay, so here's who I have. Sorry if I missed anyone. I have Laura, Melanie C., Lisa J.R., Penny L.C., Sunny S., Simi, and Christy B. I need a couple initials of a couple of you. So, Laura, go ahead, followed by Melanie.
Thanks, everyone. Good morning. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic, and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Yeah, like what was mentioned, this is Bill W. and Dr. Bob's first visit to Bill Dotson. And, you know, hopelessness, that first word, hopelessness. Hopelessness is it's a good place to be at this point. You know, it's a... It shows my need for a higher power. It shows my need of surrender. And they waited 2 days before approaching Bill D to share their story with him, because a man's brain must be cleared before he can be approached, as we're told earlier. And these are precise instructions on how to do a 12-step call. And, you know, he's hopeless. He's afraid to go out the door. He can't understand it. And only another compulsive eater can help a real compulsive eater, is my experience. You know, doctors spoke to me, my parents spoke to me, psychologists, psychiatrists spoke to me, and their feedback was, if you're hungry, Laura, just eat, you know, just choose healthier options, and, you know, eat three times a day. And they didn't identify not with the food, but with that mental obsession that goes through my mind every time I pick up my alcoholic foods. And, you know, it's shared on this line a lot, but I love the analogy that, you know, when I'm in the disease, thank God I haven't been there for over 14 years, but when I am in the disease, restricting, compulsively eating, and purging, I am in a deep, dark hole. And that hole doesn't just stay the same depth. The hole gets deeper and deeper every single day. And doctors can walk by and look down the hole, and this is what I've heard on this line, and say, you know, come on, just try harder, climb harder, use your muscles and climb harder. Parents can look down, friends can look down, and until somebody jumps into that hole with me and says, hold my hand, let's go, I'm going to take you out of here, I could not get it. You know, pulling myself up by my bootstraps was my MO my entire life. And for some reason, I just could not do that here. And I need to identify and understand that I'm not alone. And if you're new here, if you're struggling, you're not alone. You know, if you can nod your head and say, yeah, I do the same thing with my food, I understand that mental obsession. You know, the idea of if you're hungry, eat. If you're not hungry, don't eat. I get that. Then you're in the right place. So I thank God for this program, for my abstinence one day at a time, and for each of you. Thanks. I pass.
Thank you, Laura W. And Melanie C., you're up next, followed by Lisa J.R.
Thank you, Kathleen O. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm calling in from Oregon. Hopelessness. Hopelessness. Oh, but that's no use. What is no use? The treatment that they came to give him for alcoholism, and the ism is the mind, is the mind, is the mind, is the mind. And you can continue through these little paragraphs to see how his mind continued and what they were working with. He was hopeless. There was no use. Don't even try. And it occurs to me when I'm looking at this is because he's never had a treatment for alcoholism. Being a naysayer because of the loss of hope that he had. You know, he'd been in hospital now 8 times in 6 months and nothing but his past experience to draw from. And as an individual like I am, I can only draw from my own strength. Pulling myself up by the bootstraps is what I did. And so if I'm looking at that for my inspiration to pull out, it says I'm done. I'm a goner. I can see that there's something different in you and I want it so bad. But I fail at what I do. And I don't think that I can bear another failure. I just don't think that I can. And if I stay here and I stay hidden in this place, I can be safe from maybe even from myself. But what happened for me is the ability to continue to hear what the last line is. That's me. That's me. I drink like that and I think like that. And if there's any shred of being able to kind of get myself through that little narrow hole that is light and follow what you do, I can have what you have and I can learn what you've learned. And that happened for me and people came alongside me. They were entirely abstinent. They knew about allergy of the body. They knew about the obsession of the mind. They experientially were able to pass on to me, not just snake oil, experientially be able to pass on to me what it was going to be like to treat the ism. And they stayed by me in my neediness. And man, oh man, was I needy in the beginning. There were 30 calls a day I made sometimes just to make it from the last bite of that meal, eating abstinently entirely, to the next bite, maybe 3 or 4 hours, maybe 5 hours later, to the next meal, they were there for me. And that's exactly what these two men are saying to this gentleman. And then pretty soon, after that abstinence and the steps to work, it will become his new story. And long before that, it will become his new story. And then we build the momentum from there. And then the rest we learn as students in this big book, how to carry that on and to keep its momentum. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Melanie C. And Lisa J.R., you're up next, followed by Penny L.C. Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning, everybody. Lisa J.R., gratefully recovered by God's grace today in Baltimore, Maryland. Wow, hopelessness. I'm a goner. You know, I've had a faith walk my whole life since I was little, but I realized it took me 53 years to realize I was begging about this disease to God, constantly begging. For the longest time, my prayer walk was, God, you know, help me control my food, help me eat, help me do all this. Then it shifted in the later years, the last three or four years of my illness. God, take me home. I can't deal with this anymore. Take me home. I'm ready. Just get me out of here. I can't handle this food. I knew I was a goner. And every time when I first entered the rooms of OA, I found that my bottom had a trap door every time. You know, and then just by God's grace alone, I lingered on a meeting one night and found somebody who had something different in her voice. And I began to speak with her, and there was a gravitational pull. There was something about her. And she's the one who told me about Vision for You. And then when I listened to the lines of Vision for You, wow, everyone had that gravitational pull. And I realized you guys had something that I wanted. It was just unvarnished truth. in love, and that's what I needed. I didn't, you know, because of my negotiating nature, I, you know, you guys saw right through the places, the blank spots where I would try to negotiate with the disease. And so, you know, it says that for an hour, the two friends told them about their drinking experiences. And I've now, you know, as I've been in recovery, I've learned that, you know, it's best for me to read the doctor's opinion with someone. And as we're doing it, we can identify in and we can, you know, they can say, gee, that's me. And I relate my experiences and sprinkle them throughout that chapter. And we decide if we want to go from there. And 99.9% of the time, people want to be sponsored after they read that and can identify in. They're not just listening to me. My faith walk tells me that a cord of three strands is not easily broken. And when I am with another foodaholic, compulsive overeater, bulimic, anorexic, whatever, and God is in the midst, that's a powerful thing. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. And Penny L.C., you're up next, followed by Sunny S.
Thank you, Kathleen. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. Good morning to everyone on the line. Hopelessness. How did I reach my hopelessness? I remember every attempt to lose weight. And every time I had that first attempt at that diet, that new exercise plan, I had hope. But every time it failed. Why? Because that wasn't the solution for me. And it was so discouraging. And of course, I reached hopelessness. It's understandable that when you try and try and try and try and nothing works, you gave up, you lose that hope. And yet, when I came to the rooms of 12-step programs where I heard the solution, then when I heard people who did what I did with food, who suffered the consequences that I did with food, I could relate to their experience. But then beyond that, with that identifying in, I could hear their solution. I could hear that there was a way, and a way that could possibly work for me. And that's what these gentlemen were giving this person in the bed that day. They were giving him that one glimmer that said, maybe I don't have to leave this hospital and get drunk again. Maybe I don't have to leave my next fix of whatever the diet or the exercise plan or the, you know, whatever support meeting I was going to that was not programmed, and go and get my binge foods right after the meeting or the exercise or whatever it was. Maybe I also could do what my fellows that I was hearing do, and that is to work a program of recovery with a solution and come alongside them. And so then I not only got to identify in with what they had walked through for their pain, I got to identify in with the possibility that I too could have what they had.
Time, please.
That freedom. Yes, and that freedom. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny L.C. And Sunny S., you're up next, followed by Simi.
Thank you. Can I be heard? This is Sunny S.
Yes. Yes, you can.
Thank you for letting me share this morning. And by the way, my name is spelled S-A-N-N-E, and the last digit is S. Yeah, you know, when it says hopelessness, for me, I'm going to relate this directly to my story. I didn't understand why, you know, after being educated on the topic over and over again, or after knowing how, you know, sick my blood would feel after every binge, I would still go back. I didn't get it, you know, just like this man here, you know, I'm afraid to go out the door. I mean, for me, it was the same thing. So much so that in college, I was completely convinced that I would be obese, you know, by the time I was 30. And when I say obese, I mean like completely gone, you know, like losing my ability to have children, to have a regular life. And I remember sharing this with my partner at the time, and he was baffled when he heard that, you know, like, what is going on with this woman that she completely believes that she's lost? And, you know, and when it says hopeless again, it was a feeling of, like, also worthlessness, you know, because I didn't get it. So my sense of worth, my sense of, like, being missed by God, you know, like, why do I have this? Why do everyone else not have it? I was confused. I didn't get why I was being punished this way. You know, I really felt like something was terribly wrong with me. And, you know, honestly, even when I walked in the room, I was completely convinced that people wouldn't get me. You know, like I thought I was so far gone that, you know, I walked in completely sure that I wasn't going to find a solution again, because I had tried so many different things. And, you know, to my surprise, and this may sound a little bit, I don't know the word for it, but the special editions for me were like one of the biggest gifts, you know, because I heard my story and I heard a solution attached to my story. And it was the first time where I felt like I was going to be okay. You know, I had suffered from insomnia, and every single year closer to my bottom, it got worse, to a moment where I was trembling before falling asleep at night. And finding the special editions and listening to them before I fell asleep allowed me to go to rest calmly. Like, other people have this too, and they found, you know, a solution. Just like it says here, like, that's me. I eat like that. Holy crap, you know, they recovered. And I did recover, you know, fairly early in my life. I reached the bottom when I was 21. And I've been 2.5 years abstinent now. But I was just so ready, you know, like I was like, wow, I've been suffering from this for a very long time. And I was a true prisoner, you know, like I didn't eat anymore, like nourishing foods. I was only eating sugar. I was getting very sick quickly. Thank you for the time reminder. I'll wrap up. And now, you know, I still, honestly, I get emotional about the recovery that I have in regards to, like, my ability to sleep, my ability to have relationships, and even, like, learn, you know, who I am today, you know, as a sober, abstinent person. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Senius. And Simi, if you could give me the first initial of your last name, followed by Christy B. I thought I heard a Simi or a Simi. Maybe not. Okay, Christy B., you want to go ahead?
Yes, this is Christy B., recovering compulsive overeater from Washington State. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can. Thank you.
What jumped out at me in this two paragraphs, short paragraphs, but very powerful, was the last couple of sentences. That's me. I drink like that. And I thought, wow, yeah. You know, the hopelessness in that, to me, was where I was at before I found OA. And I found OA about 12 years ago. And when people started talking about how they ate, I thought, wow, I had never heard anyone that described eating the way I do. And I was overjoyed with that. And for a long time, I had partial recovery and things were doing well, but there was nothing really firm in OA as to how to actually recover. And about 6 months ago, someone turned me on to A Vision for You. And the first thing I heard is people saying, you know, they're recovered. And I thought, wow, how do they do that? You know, because actually lately, like the sentence says, I got drunk on the way home from here. I can't count how many meetings I would go home from and stop at the store and get something and eat on my way home after the meeting. But then after listening to A Vision for You and hearing people talk about being recovered, and they had something. They had that something in their voice, and I wanted that. I want that real bad. And so after a few months, I finally got the courage to get myself a sponsor and start working through the program. And I am so grateful for A Vision for You, for showing me how exactly to recover. What do I need to do step by step to recover? Because I don't want to go back to that total hopelessness. I remember that thinking that I was, you know, I used to tell some of my friends that you're going to see me on TV, that 600-pound life show, because I don't have any top to my weight gain. And I know it. I've seen it in my family, and I just don't want to go there. So I'm very grateful for this meeting, for everyone on the line, and I thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Christy B. And just a reminder, we're on page 157 in Chapter 11, starting with the third paragraph, Hopelessness Was Written. We're reading through two paragraphs, ending with I Drink Like That. And I'm going to open up the line. Who else would like to share on those two paragraphs?
Lynn S.
Charles H.
Lynn S.
Reggio.
Charles H. Reggio.
Patty T.
Patty T.
Marissa E.
Marissa E.
Dorita P.
And Dorita P. Okay, let's stop with that. All right, so I have Lynn F., Charles H., Reggio, Patty P., Marissa E., and Dorita P. So if you're not Lynn S., would you please mute your phone and go ahead, Lynn S.
Good morning. This is Lynn S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. I had two images of being hopeless with this, and they were both in program. And the first one was when I attended my very first OA meeting. And please bear in mind, this is how I saw it. I think it's true, but this is how I saw it. I walked into a room, and everybody was large. And I was 140 pounds overweight myself, but everybody was large. And the person who was sharing had said something like, I just binged in the parking lot, but I'm here. And she was chairing the meeting. And all they talked about was food and how they ate. And they couldn't stop eating, but that was okay because they were here in the rooms. And they all talked about therapy. And I remember leaving that meeting completely hopeless, just completely hopeless, thinking, oh, my God, oh, my God. And these people were announcing how many years they had been there. I thought, I know how to do this already. This is my life. Like, this is terrible. And the reason I'm saying this, I wasn't going to talk about this. I was going to talk about something else. But the reason I'm saying this is the more I listen to the meetings, I realize how critically important it is that I attend more face-to-face meetings. And I like to go to the strong ones because I need to get my batteries recharged and don't you know, and I want to hear about recovery. But I need to take what I hear here at these meetings and take it to our face-to-face meetings that perhaps aren't that strong so that somebody else who walks in doesn't feel that same sense of hopelessness that I did at an OA meeting. And the other thing I just wanted to mention was the second time I felt that hopeless was I was in an 8-year relapse and I could not get it back again. And I can remember saying to God, you know, like, I don't know what's going to become of me, God. Like, I truly don't know because I've tried so hard and I know that you and the steps are the only way out and I can't do it. So, you know, I honestly didn't know where I was going to go from there. And both those times when I was at my most helpless, God stepped in and I got it. I was able to put the food down and I got recovery. And I am so grateful to God and I'm so thankful for this reminder of hopelessness. Thank you. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Lynn S. Charles H., you're up next, followed by Reggie O.
Thank you very much, moderator, for your service. This is Charles H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Hopelessness, right? You know, an old timer told me back in the days when I wasn't really ready and I wasn't desperate. Now, you can't tell the truth to somebody that ain't desperate enough to hear it. But that paragraph in the doc's opinion where it says in the course of his third treatment, that's all I got to do, right? And the before that paragraph, it says hopeless, that word hopeless. And the old timer said, Charles, I know you're not ready to hear this, you're not desperate, but if you draw a line from hopeless to recovered, that's all you got to do. So in your time or in your free time, you can take a look at that. But then I want to go to where it says he sold himself short, and it says he had finally learned that drinking was a fatal illness made up of an allergy plus an obsession. And once the drinking had passed from habit to obsession, we were completely hopeless and could look forward only to spending the balance of our lives in mental institutions or to death. So, you know, when people get on the line and goad, you're killing people. And we got to have compassion for those people, but we got to speak the truth. And that's what I heard in this line, the truth. I'm not going to comfort you with a lie. I'm going to kill you with the truth. And the big book is the truth. It's like a male lion. You don't got to defend it. It will defend itself. And then this story, he sold himself short. It's talking about Bill D. He, the first man that Bill W. and Dr. Bob had worked with successfully. You know, and it goes on to say in Vision for You, you know, there's going to be a lot of failures. And then the Devil May Care person came up. I know I'm jumping ahead. He's the fourth one. So don't be scared to carry this message and hurt somebody feeling on this line. If you speak in a meeting and you don't disturb nobody, you might as well go back home, take your ball, take your bat, and go back home. So when I listen to people on this meeting, on this line, they disturb me and they save my life. So I thank you, Vision, and I thank you, all you recovered people, that's shining your light. Keep shining.
Thank you, Charles H. Reggie O., you are up next, followed by Patty T.
Hey, thanks again, Kathleen. This is Reggie O. in the Los Angeles area. And boy, oh boy, you know, I'm sitting here struck with how there are like eight lines here, two very short paragraphs, and the amazing treasures that are in here that being able to connect and having one recovered person speaking to an unrecovered person who has lost hope and thinks there's no one else who drinks or, as Melanie said, thinks out there like him or her. And, you know, hopeless, my history is, I have a history of chronic relapse after being recovered many years ago. But let me say something about these two paragraphs, because I realized that the book, you know, years ago, many people only had the book, and sometimes that worked for them. And I could have never been one of those people who only had the book and not the, you know, the benefit of a community, because I did everything like I ate for the most part. I read compulsively as quickly as I can to get as much, I hope this in the past tense, but reading as quickly as I could to get as much as I possibly could and get through to the finish line, you know. And that's the way I ate, you know, just as quickly, shoving it in as quickly as I could to get to the, you know, to get to that, whatever the food is that was going to give me the ease and comfort or cause me to pass out. Hopelessness, I didn't know about OA when I came into it. I had begun Al-Anon and was seeing how alcoholism in my family had affected my life. And I'd been a heavy drinker, I never crossed the alcoholic line, but I'd also been a heavy drinker myself. And one day I just woke up, sat straight up as I was reading something, thought, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic with food, as I was remembering the night before I'd gone to bed with a bag of M&Ms and woke up and saw my kitchen in complete disarray with all the unopened boxes and bags and dirty dishes. And, you know, it's like, who did that? You know, it's like a dream, and I knew it was me, but I never had the experience of doing it. But God's good, and I, within 2 weeks, I'd run into two old friends who had entered OA and said, my life has changed, and I went to a meeting. And the meeting was a woman who held up a pair of jeans, the qualifier, held up a pair of jeans that was at least 10 sizes larger than she was, a beautiful woman who really did have that glow. And she talked about eating out of trash cans and how that pair of, it was overalls actually, and how that pair of overalls was the only thing that she could wear. She wore it day after day, and how she, in the trash cans, and I thought, I totally got it. I totally got it, but never remembered eating out of trash cans, you know, until I remembered, you know, when the athletes I was coaching used to come in my office and leave their plates, you know, left over with French fries or half a hamburger or something like that for conversation. And I couldn't wait until they left so I could go pull the plates out. Thank you, Kathleen. But that's all I'll say. It's really powerful what it is to read and bring this book to life like we do here. I'm grateful for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Reggio. And Patty T, you're up next, followed by Marissa E.
Hi, this is Patty T in Southern California, and I'm gratefully recovered today. You know, that word hopelessness. Boy, you know, when I went to my first OA meeting, I was in such denial about my condition that I didn't even know what hopelessness felt like. That's the truth. I just knew I couldn't stop eating and that there was no hope. I was waiting for the heart attack or the stroke or whatever just to take me out. That's how I just learned to accept that there was no hope for me. And then I got to that first meeting and I heard the speaker that led the meeting talked about going to the movies and getting the biggest popcorn he could, and throughout the movie, just hand to mouth, and at the end, he would turn the large bag or bucket up to his mouth so he could get every last kernel, and then lick the sides with his fingers, and so he could get every tiny bit of salt and fat. And you know, I went, oh, that's how I eat. Suddenly, I realized, oh my gosh, I've met someone who I can identify with. It was a man. He was older than me, but he talked about what it had been like, and that's what it was like for me. And that was my first glimmer of hope, that there might be somebody on the face of the earth that understood how I eat, and maybe even why, and maybe even how not to. Like, And so, you know, I always say that my first 5 years in OA was to help me learn to feel, and these last years have been to help me learn to heal. You know, I understand today that I am a compulsive overeater no matter what, no matter how much recovery I have, no matter how recovered I am, because if I take that first compulsive bite or use that first compulsive food behavior, I'll be right back there unless I have a fit spiritual condition and a community of fellows to help me find that road every single day. And this meeting does that for me, and I'm so grateful to all of you. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty T. Marissa E., you are up next, followed by Dorita P.
Thank you, Kathleen. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. Thank you, everyone, for your shares. You know, just identifying in how he talks about the last three times I got drunk on the way home. And that reminded me on page 23. It talks about how, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. Right? So here he is, stone cold sober. Right, time and time again, and sobriety is not enough, right? Entire abstinence is not enough. I have to put the food down and pick up the steps. And, you know, identifying with Bill D., I remember, you know, being afraid to get out of bed, right? How many times did I binge, you know, all day, all night, passed out, woke up, and swore on my life, right? I would not eat like that again, only to find myself 1 or 2 minutes later digging out of the trash can, like the remnants of what I had left, right? So I remember being afraid of getting out of bed because I knew I was going to dig out of that trash can and continue eating what I had left from the night before. And so I'm just so, so grateful, right? It's, you know, people have talked about it. Being hopeless, that's a good place to be, right? And so I remember just, you know, having that fear. And at the same time, my higher power led me to a meeting, and I did identify, right? It was like everyone at that meeting was sharing, and it was like they were reading out of my autobiography that I hadn't even written yet. It just was like they were reading out of the chapters of my life about my experience with this disease. So I'm just so grateful for that hopelessness and for the gift of willingness, really, to put down the food and pick up the steps. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Marissa E. And Dorita P., go ahead.
Hi, is it Kathleen?
Yes.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, my name is Dorita Pippin. Oh, I'm sorry, Dorita P., and I am from Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And, I'm really grateful to be here. And it was real good for the guys to share with this guy about the hopelessness. And what I'm finding is that, well, what I kind of discovered was that I'll just speak for myself, I am not talking about the disease enough in the meetings. We have all around the world, there's a lot of struggling meetings and a lot of struggling people. And I know when I first came in years ago, I heard so much about the disease, like how fatal, you know, that it's fatal, and like how bad it was. I mean, they talked about the disease so much, and I thought if I walked out the meeting and didn't do anything, you know, then I was gonna die like that night. I mean, they talked that it was like so urgent and so fatal. So I need to bring that back. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, when I came here, they told me what my problem was. I never knew what my problem was. They said I have an allergy of the body and then an obsession of the mind. So when I eat certain foods, not all foods, but just certain foods, I can't stop. And then when I do stop, I have this mind that tells me, you know, it's okay, it'll be different this time. And and they also told me that, you know, food is not my problem. I thought food was my problem, but they told me that food was not my problem. They told me that living was my problem, and I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to relate to people. And I'll just close and say, I'm grateful, in the African-American community, we say that it takes a village to raise a child. And I was a child, and it took all of you recovered people to help me. And so if you're new, just keep coming back. We have a solution here. You know, it may not be your solution. I don't say that this is it, but I know this is it for me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Dorita P. Okay, let's see. I think we're pretty close to the end here. So thank you, everyone who shared this morning. It was great hearing everyone share. I could totally relate. That's me. So thank you. Special thanks to our readers, CJH, Robin P., Kathy Jo P., and Gina R. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So Kathy Jo P., will you please read a vision for you?
Yes, good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.